I'm David Smith, and you're listening to the Faith in Teaching podcast from the Kaiser Institute for Christian Teaching and Learning at Calvin University. In this series, we'll be talking with researchers and educators who are working to understand how Christian faith affects teaching, learning, and the way we do education. I'm here in Adelaide, Southern Australia, for the International Transforming Education Conference, and another attendee at the conference is Trevor Calling, who's been director of the Stapleford Centre in England that played a significant role in developing Christian involvement in education, and more recently has been working at Canterbury Christchurch University in the UK with the National Institute for Christian Education Research. So Trevor, just tell us a little bit about that role and what NICER is and what it does and why it's NICER.
Okay, yes. Well, it's got this unfortunate acronym, which ends up with it being NICER, but we'll just put that to one side. But it's basically a research centre which was set up by the university, that's Canterbury Christchurch University. Now, Canterbury Christchurch was founded in 1962 by the Church of England with the specific function of training teachers for Church of England schools, and there are about 4,500 Church of England schools across the country. And the research centre is it's a unique institution in the UK, and we were established to carry out research in support of that church school system. And I've led it for about 8 years, just recently retired from that role. And we've done various bits of research, which we hope has sort of helped teachers a bit working in those sorts of environments.
So you've been involved in education research for quite a long time, and a lot of that work used to be specifically in religious education, where you've been quite a significant voice. And that yet some of the more recent work you've been doing has been more cross-curricular and more focused on you know, teachers in church schools teaching a variety of subjects. What prompted that shift?
Well, I've always been interested in the role that Christian teachers play in schools. I came into that through being a religious education teacher. Although initially I was a science teacher, so I've sort of moved around a bit. So I started as a biology teacher, and then someone spotted that I went to church, which in the UK means you end up teaching religious education. It's a compulsory subject. I like that, so I switched over into religious education. But throughout that, I've maintained this concern about the role of the Christian teacher. And in the last few years, I've had the opportunity through this role at NICER to focus on that particular role, not just in religious education, but right across the curriculum. So it's really, coming to fruition, lots of things that I've been doing over the years.
So one of the many ways that we've collaborated is we were both involved in the What If Learning project that the Kaiser Institute was involved in, where we tried to develop a framework at whatiflearning.com to help teachers to think about how their faith might relate to how they went about teaching and learning. And you turned that into some empirical research. Talk a little bit about how that came about and how you set that project up.
Well, we started with a desire to know exactly how teachers were getting on with this idea that we developed through What If Learning. And we wanted to see how they understood it and interpreted it. So we managed to raise some funds to carry out the research, and we recruited 14 teachers from 3 different church schools. In the UK, we have a variety of church schools. So we worked in one Catholic, one Church of England, and one that was a joint between the two churches. And what we did is work with these teachers for a year, and basically we observed them working with the What If Learning approach and seeing how they interpreted it, what struggles they had with it, what joys they had with it, how it impacted on what they did in their classrooms. And really we walked a journey with them, actually. So it was a whole year, and they exposed themselves to researchers who were trying to find out whether this did make a difference to their practice.
So you mentioned struggles. Let's start there. What kinds of things were teachers struggling with in terms of trying to be a teacher in a church school, or a teacher who connects Christian faith to their teaching?
Well, At the time, the Church of England particularly emphasised the notion that their schools were distinctively Christian, which was really the Church trying to say, we're not just an ordinary school, we're not just like an ordinary community school, we have a distinctive ethos. The word distinctively Christian created a sense of panic in quite a lot of the teachers because they thought somehow that meant they had to sort of push Christian stuff into their lessons. And we had one maths teacher who captured the whole anxiety for us because she described the whole experience as weird. And it was as though she thought that somehow she had to do algebra followed by the gospel followed by trigonometry. So it sort of became a sandwich with the Christian bits squeezed in the middle to make sure it was distinctively Christian. And the word weird actually became part of the discourse. And there were other teachers who used that word. So we had one geography teacher, for example, who, when we watched her lesson, it became clear that it was a really awkward experience. The children thought it was awkward. She thought it was awkward. The researchers thought it was awkward. And when we talked it through with her afterwards, it was because she changed her questioning style. Normally she had an open, divergent questioning style. When she got to doing what she thought was distinctively Christian, she went convergent. So she felt she had to get the kids to give her particular answers. So there was quite a lot of misunderstanding about what it means to be distinctively Christian.
So she felt like she suddenly had to teach in this more authoritarian, more right answer kind of way because she was doing the Christian moment.
Yeah, that's right. So in other words, her geography teacher teaching normally was quite exploratory and open-ended questions. But when it got to the Christian bit, she felt her job was to go transmissionist, as we call it. That she was there, she thought, to transmit to kids the Christian truths. And that just shut the whole discussion down.
So where do you think that comes from? Where do you think she gained that instinct?
I think it's quite a widespread instinct because I think there's a perception out there that being Christian is about telling people what we believe so that they have to change their minds. So it's very much a sort of, I would call it a positivist way of thinking about our faith. It's like, you know, we've got all the answers. We know what the truths are. And our job is actually to tell other people what those truths are. And their job is to listen and agree. And if they don't agree, well, somehow there's a problem.
So you just described, I think like two sources of weirdness here, right? One is this feeling like I'm teaching math and Bible verses don't fit in here. So there's this sense of like content weirdness of like, this isn't the right spot to suddenly mention religious stuff. Like it's as if you're watching a Star Trek movie and Little Red Riding Hood suddenly appears on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise for 2 minutes and then you're back to Klingons. Yeah. And then there's this second one that's this kind of like the mode that I feel like being Christian ought to put me in, which is preaching to people and telling them the right answer, that's also feels like not the right mode for teaching a geography class. So it sort of puts me in the wrong mode.
Yeah, exactly. So both of those were under the surface in their thinking. And because we went in and asked her to try and do this, and the other teachers as well, it sort of rose to the surface. So we had quite a lot of discussions with teachers about this weird word. Yeah. Became a very important work in the project.
So some people would say that's because it is weird, right? That Bible verses don't fit in math and Christian proclamation doesn't fit in schools and Christians are people who tell other people the right answer and so probably aren't good people to have in education. So I presume that's not the conclusion you were moving towards as you identified this weirdness.
No, it certainly wasn't. And perhaps by just talking about some of the other teachers who've really made this fly and their lessons took off as they sought to interpret the what-if learning approach. That may help because, for example, we had one physical education teacher. He was a boys' physical education teacher and he did a lesson on the push pass in hockey, in field hockey. And the interesting thing that there weren't any Bible verses at all in the lesson. What he was really concerned about was the way in which the boys understood the role of sport. And he saw in British society a huge emphasis, which came largely from football, soccer, that that sport is about elite performance. It's about getting to the very top and getting all the credit and acclamation that comes with it. So he wanted to try and address that. So he decided to reframe the whole of the way in which they taught sport using the coaching model rather than the elite performance model. So we watched one lesson on the push pass. And the way he structured that lesson was to ask the kids to teach each other the push pass. And the strategy that they had to report back on at the end of that lesson was to say, how did you encourage the other person with the bits they were finding difficult? So the whole thing became about what are you good at? Are you a good encourager? How do you do it? Not how do you perform to elite standards? Now, obviously, the elite performance was still there because he wanted them to perform well. But it was how they imagined what it was that they were doing in that lesson. Now, what he'd done is to reframe the whole thing with a Christian understanding of relational and Christian understanding of, if you like, success and aspiration. He hadn't just chucked in a Bible verse halfway through.
So playing hockey becomes a kind of loving your neighbour because you're paying attention to the well-being of the person you're with.
Yeah, and that was and that was part of interpreting the whole school ethos, because this is what they were told the school was about. So what he'd done was to seek to reframe the predominant culture, if you like, in the UK, which is actually what really matters, elite performance, which tends to ignore all that stuff about encouraging other people. And he'd said he wanted deliberately and specifically to reframe the experience that the children had of a hockey lesson so that it reinforced that particular virtue.
I was struck reading about that example that, you know, he could have just gone in at the start of his hockey class and kind of preached that, right?
Yep.
And done a homily about how we need to not just be full of ourselves and, you know, seek going for the stars, but we need to care for each other and so on, and then got back to his class. But what seemed to make his approach successful was he made very specific structural changes to what he was doing. So he went from teaching students one by one to having them interact with each other. And he also changed the language he used to frame that, to use words about encouragement and so on within that, which is the sort of thing that what if learning is encouraging.
That's right. And it was a PE lesson. It was a sport lesson. It wasn't a sport lesson with a bit of Bible. It was a sport lesson. So it was authentic for him as his job. I think that was really important that he really grasped that. So he didn't find that weird, and the kids didn't find that weird at all.
Yeah, that really came through in the quotes from the focus groups. So the student, this totally made sense to the students.
Yeah,
that they were able to narrate back what the class was about, and that there was a connection between playing hockey and your Christian ethos to care about other people, and it all kind of made sense to them, and it wasn't suddenly like the you know, the Archbishop had landed in the middle of their hockey lesson or something.
Yep, that's right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah. So did you arrive at any general conclusions? I mean, if you've got, it sounds like you've got some teachers who are really kind of stuck in the weirdness and, you know, floundering to kind of get out of that, and some who've kind of cracked the code and have got this more natural way of connecting their faith or the school's Christian framework to the work that they're doing. Did you arrive at any general conclusions about what makes the difference between teachers in those two positions, or how you help them get from one to the other?
One of the conclusions we came to is that people need each other to do that. If in a school the sort of senior team just preach at the staff and say, you've got to be more Christian, get on with it, and then send them off into their individual classrooms to get on with it, they find it hard. What you need is to be able to work with other people. You need conversation, you need support. That was one of the things that came through very strongly. So that's about how a school is led. I think there are implications for churches as well, because I think that it seems that we reinforce this idea in churches that the only way of being Christian is to sort of somehow be weird, you know. And I mean, I've seen other research, sort of sociological research, which emphasizes that if we present ourselves as people who are different from everyone else and we've got somehow to be different in your face, that carries through into people's professional lives. And it's not just in teaching, it happens across the board in professional lives where people don't know how to be Christian in the workplace. So I think there's a lot that we could be doing in church about that. But the key thing, I think, is that cooperative working together on it. We actually did a piece of research with another project where we found that it takes about 7 or 8 goes at this with different trials before people really become comfortable.
So do you think you talked about the church using the distinctively Christian language. Do you think this was kind of stiffening people up to, you know, take this I've got to be different and strange now kind of thing, that wasn't helping this this learning
process?
It's
interesting the Church of England had dropped that language. I was a bit sad about that, because actually what I wanted to do was to reform it, reframe it, and say, you know, when we talk about distinctively Christian, we do not mean that somehow we are unique from everybody else. We simply mean that we're going back to our foundations, and that's the inspiration for what we do. Other people might do exactly the same thing for different reasons. We should celebrate the fact that they do good things for maybe different reasons. No, the church itself actually has decided to drop the distinctively Christian. They now use the phrase deeply Christian.
Deeply Christian, yeah. In some ways, I like that better than distinctively Christian, right? Because it's looking for a kind of a depth of consistency rather than trying to figure out how you're different. But it was interesting to me, late in the book, there's a moment where you mentioned that teachers just felt like they needed more opportunities to talk about this, that this wasn't necessarily part, even in a church school, right? School wasn't structured around opportunities to actually have conversation about what was Christian about what you were doing.
Yeah. And the agenda often becomes determined by the outside world. So certainly in the UK, results are everything. And just a little anecdote, I watched one lesson by a religious education teacher on the resurrection stories in the Gospels. And it was very interesting when you watched the exercise that he set the youngsters to do, which was that they had to write a piece on the resurrection in answer to a particular question. I can't remember what the question was, but it was on the resurrection narratives. And when he went through it, what he did was to give them an example of an A star piece of work, an example of a C piece of work, and an example of an E piece of work. And what they had to do was to actually see where their piece fitted in that spectrum. So what he'd done was to reduce the resurrection stories to a means of getting an A star. There was nothing about the spirit of the resurrection, the Okay. meaning of the resurrection in that at all.
So it sounds like some of these teachers also kind of a step back actually need to learn habits of reading the Bible that might lead to questioning and wonder and wrestling with the text and not assuming you've got it all nailed down and you know which 4 answers will give you a good grade.
Yeah, and not letting the external structures be the determinant of how you actually shape your lessons.
Yeah,
because we see that a lot in the UK. So it is quite a demanding thing to ask people to do. So those conversations which you referred to, I think, are really important, and that's where the school leadership becomes very important.
Cycling back to our hockey teacher, I was impressed with the degree to which he was also connecting what he was doing in his classroom with conversations that they were having in the department and in the school and themes in school assemblies. And so the being Christian thing, it was like it wasn't something he had to solve on his own just in his lesson by getting the whole truth now in this piece, but it was connecting it back up to the whole of what was going on in the school, which then implies these kind of conversations.
Yeah, that's right. It was very impressive. And it went even further than that, actually, because in a lot of lessons in the UK, at the end of a physical education lesson, they'll often have a little game. And we were watching this little game at the end of the lesson, and the kids kept putting their hand up. And afterwards, he said to them, "Why are you putting your hand up?" And they said, "Well, what we have to do is we have to indicate when we commit an offence. So if we kick the ball or something, which you're not allowed to do, we put your hand up." So I challenged the teachers, and I said, "This is a bit tough, isn't it, on the kids? Because, you know, if some of them become elite hockey players, if they go and play for a club, what's going to happen to them if they start sort of telling the ref, oh, I've just committed a foul, you know? The culture is you get away with it if you can. And he said, well, he said, we as a team, this is the physical education teachers, have all committed to that sort of standard of living in our own sporting lives. So on a Monday morning, they'll be playing team hockey, many of them. They will come back and they will hold each other to account about how they actually behaved on a Saturday afternoon as elite players themselves. And the kids know that. So they were deliberately trying to live it out. So it was a bigger conversation than just telling the kids what to do.
So there's a lot of layers to this. It's not just whether the Bible verse is quoted in the classroom. It's whether the teachers are living to the same standard. It's whether the school's able to have conversations. It's whether the school's articulate about its ethos to the students. Yeah, it's quite a rich recipe once you start building the layers. So,
it is.
Yeah.
It is. And but it's really exciting when you see it happen.
Yeah. Well, the book is called Christian Faith in English Church Schools.
That's right.
You can find it online.
Conversations with Classroom Teachers is its subtitle.
Right. And what the subtitle points to is there's a whole bunch of case studies of different teachers just sort of describing their successes and their struggles and the questions they're asking themselves. So even though it's a research volume and there's some sections on research method and so on, there's also some sections that I find actually quite down to earth in terms of providing, you know, the language of teachers who are trying to figure this out that might be quite interesting for other teachers to engage with. So, look for that. What If Learning is at whatiflearning.com and or whatiflearning.co.uk, depending which version of English you'd like your What If Learning in. And lots of things there to explore and think through. So, yeah, thank you for talking with us.
No, thank you. It's been a real privilege.
You've been listening to the Faith in Teaching podcast from the Caius Institute for Christian Teaching and Learning at Calvin University. Learn more at www.pedagogy.net.